I don't think AI is going to do that. So many different variables are in that situation. You got to know how to approach this person. You got to know how to talk to them. You got to sort of feel them out. Not only are you talking to that candidate, but you're also in a way talking to that person's spouse. AI is like any other technology, is programmed for every situation that somebody can think of. But there's always something new and different out there that you did not take into account when programming.
Constraints drive innovation. Hey everyone, it's Matt here for another episode of Thinking Inside the Box, a show where we discuss the innovative ways organizations and their leaders overcome complex issues at work. If you're interested in checking out our other content, you can find us at our shiny new website, InsideTheBoxPodcast.com, and on all of your favorite podcast platforms by searching Thinking Inside the Box. And if you enjoy the work we're doing here, consider leaving us a 5-star rating, a comment, and subscribing. It ensures you get updated whenever we release new content and really helps amplify our message. In today's episode, I chat with Jim Stroud. With over a decade of experience in recruitment and sourcing, Jim has consulted for companies such as Microsoft, Google, Siemens, and a host of startups. During his tenure with Randstad Sourceright as their global head of sourcing and recruiting strategy, he alleviated the sourcing and recruiting headaches of clients worldwide. He's created and sold 5 online properties, managed an award-winning blog, published a weekly newsletter for job seekers, a recruiter training magazine, and co-hosted a popular technology podcast. And today, he produces content and manages events for SourceCon, the original sourcing conference. That made him the perfect person to sit down with and chat all things talent. We began with what change in the talent profession in the past 3 years has surprised him most. What's the most common question he receives today from talent leaders? And with myriad creative projects, including 5 HR-related books, producer of a YouTube series, The Jim Stroud Show, and producer of The Jim Stroud Podcast, what inspires him to create content after all this time? It was a fun discussion, and it went a lot of places. And I hope you enjoy listening to it as much as we did recording it. And now I bring you Jim Stroud. Jim Stroud, I've had this conversation circled on my calendar now for a couple of weeks, and I'm going to be pretty honest with you. I'm looking forward to seeing where this goes. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. Thank you.
Jim, for those who don't know you personally, a bit about your background and your experiences and what's led you to today.
Sure. I've been involved in recruiting sourcing since the beginning of time, that being 1997, when the earth
Stone
initially
tablets.
Cooled. Yeah. Yeah, I've started working at MCI way back when, what you young folks may think of as Verizon these days. I think it's been traded hands so many times. I've worked for Microsoft, Google, Siemens Energy and Automation, several startup companies. I think at the height, I worked at Randstad Sourceright. I was the global head of sourcing and recruiting strategy there. Had a lot of fun, a lot of international travel there. And quite recently, I have been anointed the editor of SourceCon. SourceCon is a sourcing conference and community. It was the very first sourcing conference, started back in 2007. And I'm so proud and privileged to be a part of it today.
It is the preeminent sourcing and
yes.
authority. And I'll say this for you, because I know you're too modest to say it yourself. When we think about talent professionals, I think about a couple of like signature conferences. I think about ATD for talent management, talent development. I think about SourceCon. And for those who are unfamiliar, HR professionals and talent professionals often think about talent in a life cycle. Think about the stages of somebody's career when they're being attracted to or acquired or being vetted for an organization. That's a SourceCon discussion. That's helping our folks understand where to find the best talent, the best tools to source individuals, how to create a really great candidate experience and a great onboarding experience. And Jim, it's never been more challenging now with this hybrid world where we have to create an experience that's consistent, whether you're in an office 5 days a week or you never actually meet your direct supervisor.
Sure.
So SourceCon to me is a a melting pot, a collection place for those kinds of discussions. I'd love to hear a bit about what drew you to that particular role. You mentioned your background, your experiences. Why SourceCon now? Why is this the right step for you in your career?
Sure. Actually, I helped create SourceCon. When SourceCon was founded, there were four individuals, Rob McIntosh, Leslie O'Connor, Errol Mann, and myself. I was the MC for the first three official SourceCons and also helped market it. So where I did not invest money, I was a pretty integral part in the beginning of it. And SourceCon sort of really put me on the map in a lot of ways because I was promoting the conference, I was speaking at the conference, I was meeting all kinds of people. I was already blogging and podcasting and doing videos. So it really shined a light on me, and it made me more of an industry name in the sourcing community. So I've returned to SourceCon since the very beginning, multiple times to keynote speak there on multiple topics, generally around the future of work or sourcing, finding passive candidates in creative ways, that kind of thing. And the last SourceCon that I spoke at was in Minneapolis, and I spoke on AI and its impact on the sourcing and recruiting industry. And the MC that was scheduled to MC there caught COVID, so they weren't able to attend. So they said, "Hey, Jim, you're here. Would you mind?" I said, "Sure, why not?" Like the old days, jump right in, had some fun, had some laughs, gave my presentation. People seemed to like it by virtue of them still being awake when I was done. And they said, "Hey, that was great. Would you care to do that full time?" I said, "Sure, why not?" So they brought me over, and it's been a love story ever since.
When I think about that particular love story, I know you're also party to a lot of conversations with talent leaders around the world. Yeah. I'm curious, for those who maybe aren't familiar with the day in the life of a talent professional, just how much have things changed in the last 4 years?
Oh, they change every 5 minutes, it seems like.
Right.
One thing, a couple of things that are they're very stark in my mind. One is this war between return to office and work from home. You know, when COVID hit and people were forced to work from home, it was sort of a double-edged sword. People didn't like it at first because it was so confining. You want to see other people. You almost feel like a prisoner. But after a while, people got used to it. They liked it. They liked not having to have a commute every day. And they got used to it rather quickly, and they were able to prove that they could still maintain a level of productivity. So from the worker perspective, hey, I can work in my pajamas. I can get the work done. I still have time to deal with the kids and to get my coffee and to just sit back a little bit more. I don't have to worry about driving in traffic for 2 hours. I love it. Managers, they didn't know how to deal with it initially. They were dealing with how to manage people at home. Were they working? How do I know they're working? Maybe I should install spyware inside their computer. In some extreme cases, they would say, some managers I've heard would say, "Hey, when you're working, why don't you just turn your webcam on and just leave it on? So I know that you're there and I know that you're actually doing stuff." I've heard some really, really wild stories around that. Some managers adapted and said, "You know what? I'm good with it. Just give me your work, and as long as it's here when I need it, it's fine. I'm really going to look only at the results of the work, and that's going to prove to me that you've been working because you're able to deliver the work that I asked for in a timely fashion." Other managers are still like, "No, I need to see you in an office, because if you're in the office, people are going to collaborate. People are going to collaborate more. You're going to have more interaction, which will spark debate, which will spark innovation and kumbaya and all that kind of stuff." So you have those different dynamics all at play. And then on an even higher level, you have people in the C-suite going, "How much are we spending on office space? And no one's there. Can we get out of this lease? How much is this costing us? Okay, we need to you know, get people back here to justify this expense, or we need to get out of this lease, which is going to cost us an ungodly amount of money that we really don't have, and we're already uncertain about this economy." So all the dynamics around return to office and work from home, that's one thing that has really shifted a lot in my mind. Another thing, which has also been a huge impact, just as much, if not greater, I think greater to an extent, is AI. Just saying AI makes some people anxious, and it makes some people excited and happy. And I generally hear a couple of questions people ask me about AI. They ask me, well, how soon will AI take my job away? And how much money can I have? Can I save with AI? How will it impact my workforce planning? All that kind of stuff. It is a specter on the world of work that will not go away ever again. I mean, the world has changed. I remember when I first, I'm rambling here, which I guess is good for a podcast, but I remember when I saw the internet for the very first time in the 90s, right? Back when America Online was giving diskettes out like water, you know? And when I finally logged into America, was it America Online? CompuServe, something, Global Network Navigator. That was my first internet email. Yeah, Global Network Navigator. So when I first logged into it and saw what was available out there, the first thing that popped in my head, I remember distinctly, the whole world has changed. Nothing's the same anymore. It felt like riding horses all your life, and then somebody brings out the car, and you're like, whoa, that's a car. You know, we won't need horses anymore, or at least we won't use them as much as we did. When I saw ChatGPT early this year, January, which is amazing to me that it's only been like a year, I remember that same feeling like, wow, the whole world has changed. And so AI's impact on the workforce, well, the society overall, but the workforce is another sudden shift in how I think the whole world has changed over the past few years. People are concerned about losing their jobs. Companies are wondering, can I save money? Companies are wondering, are they going to, some companies may be wondering, are they going to stay in business? You know, because when you have AI doing all these things, you have all these AI tools, it's like you don't have to worry so much about if you are a Google wondering so much about what Bing is going to do. But now you're wondering about everybody who has access to all these wonderful tools. So some 10-man operation or 100-person operation could give you some serious competition and chip away at your shareholder value, whatever. So it's just amazing. My head just swims on all that.
Hey everyone, it's Matt here. I hope you're enjoying today's conversation. And before we continue, I want to update you on my latest creative project, This Week at Work. Every Friday at 7 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, that's 10 a.m. Eastern and 3 p.m. GMT, my good friend Chris Rainey of HR Leaders and I discuss the latest trending topics on the minds of executives globally, from organizational culture to technology and the future of work. We cover it all. And we invite some of our favorite colleagues to join us, from Dave Ulrich to Whitney Johnson, and executives from iconic brands such as NASA, Krispy Kreme, and WebMD. What can I say? We like to keep things interesting. And if you've been following us for a while, you'll no doubt recognize the fun partnership Chris and I have developed over years podcasting together. We're not afraid to be real, share our own challenges, and ask the tough questions. Joining? Well, that part's easy. Follow me on LinkedIn, click the bell icon on the top right of my profile, and you'll get notified when we go live. And now, back to our discussion.
And then I think is that as much as AI has impacted everything, especially in the world of recruiting, in a lot of ways, I think it's overblown. I think some people are worrying and are anxious a bit too much. A lot of things could happen, but because I'm cynical in my old age, I can think of a lot of reasons why it won't happen and blow up everything as much people think it will. I'm going to take a breath. I guess I
So
rambled.
you know the number one rule of podcasting is when the guest is going, let the guest go. So, Jim, I'm happy to let you do your thing. And so much good stuff in that. You and I get a lot of the same questions. So people come to me pretty frequently now and say, Matt, how is AI going to affect my role? And I could be a recruiter or a talent professional, or I'm a CHRO, or I'm even a CEO of a small company. And my answer has been pretty consistently, the chances of you being replaced entirely by AI are very slim. The chances of you being replaced by somebody who uses AI are very high. So it's about, to your point, it's another overlay on society. You think about electricity, the world was never the same. The internet, the world was never the same. And now AI, the world's never the same. And I think what people don't perhaps fully grasp yet is just how intertwined it's going to become in everything that we do. In the same way, your Bluetooth hooks up your speakers and your phone and your app, it's going to have that level of connectivity and the level of support through more concierge type query services, you'll be able to interact with your bank in a completely different way and interact with your credit card company in a completely different way. And you pay your utility bills in a different way and aggregate your bills and analyze your expenses and, you know, figure out where you have unnecessary fees that you're paying. And the level of intelligence that's going to provide to you with currently under leveraged information that we're all sitting on is going to be absolutely massive. Additionally, it's going to, as you pointed out, free us from the mundane manual stuff that nobody likes to do. I've never in my 20 years being in HR ever talked to a talent professional who said, "Matt, I love nothing more than filling out a spreadsheet and, you know, making sure that file is just in tip-top shape." Like, people want to interact with people. They want to solve problems. They want to feel good and feel like they're contributing to something that's bigger than them. And when we can put AI between us and that manual administration, it's going to free up people to do that work. Now, my fear, like you, is pretty similar in that in a situation where an organization can bring in AI and achieve efficiencies, I hope that some of those efficiencies that are realized are reinvested back into the workforce in the form of training, or maybe not ask people to work 80 hours a week, or maybe having a day off every now and again, or paying people benefits or things like that. My fear is some it's going to be a spectrum. Some organizations will do that and create better work, and others will use it and exploit that technology and reduce their workforce in a consistent way so they can reduce their overheads and make more money. So I think it's going to be a bit of everything. But one thing that I think is really important to point out in this conversation is that talent professionals are going to be able to decide which of those models, and it's not binary, but which of the organizations that they want to support going forward. Because what is also a key factor is that demographically speaking, there are more people leaving the workforce every single day today than are joining it. And it's going to be that way for the next 15 years. So talent has never been more valuable, and it will only increasingly get more valuable in the future. Whether it's replaced by AI or by another source of talent, organizations are going to have to be mindful of what's their strategy going forward. It's going to be a limiting factor in a way that it hasn't been in previous generations, where you could simply turn over people and bring somebody else in new. You're going to hit a ceiling at some point with talent in some organizations, and that's a different reality for a lot of big companies.
As you say that, I was thinking that the recruitment industry overall is like a microcosm of how AI will impact society overall. I was thinking about actually something that I was dealing with not too long ago, where you have all of these AI sourcing tools, right? Initially, when I got into sourcing, when you found people, you did a search online through job boards, or you look for people's resumes on their websites, or you do a Boolean search in Google and bada boom, bada bing, a resume comes up. Now you have so many sourcing tools out there that it doesn't take a scientist or a very experienced sourcer to find the perfect candidate or to find candidates out there. It's getting easier and easier to press a button and boom, you got the resume of somebody or you have information on a passive candidate. And so I see that being a really big impact on sourcing and recruiters, because they'll say, okay, why do I need a sourcer anymore? Or why do I need a recruiter? Some manager might say, because I can press a button and boom, the resume of somebody I want pops up. Well, to that I say, and this is why I say such a microcosm, is that although the machine is going to make it easier to find people, you still have to have someone to actually talk to that person. And there are AI out there that can actually talk to people. I know that. But you're going to need someone to say, hey, I saw your information online. You have the look that I want to know better. I want to tell you about this new job in a new state. I want you to uproot your family and move from Seattle to Florida. And I want you to do the same thing you're doing over there for less money. And I want you to relook at all your family. And I want you to do it in within a month, because that's the time limit I have to fill this role. I don't think AI is going to do that. So many different variables are in that situation. You got to know how to approach this person. You got to know how to talk to them. You got to sort of feel them out. Not only do you have to, and recruiters know this, not only are you talking to that candidate, but you're also in a way talking to that person's spouse. You're talking to their kids. You know, what kind of argument can you make to say, hey, you're comfortable in Seattle. You've been there all your life, but I want you to do something totally different over here. AI is like any other technology, is programmed for every situation that somebody can think of. But there's always something new and different out there that you did not take into account when programming. You know, sort of like almost like with traffic. You have traffic lights, you have street lights and signs, and these people who plan out traffic maps and red lights, that kind of stuff, they plan for every single contingency as possible. But every day, there's an accident somewhere, multiple accidents on every highway somewhere. So you can plan for everything possible, but there always will be an unpredictable, unknown variable that will come into play. And human beings can react to that. Human beings can learn from that on the fly and keep on going. With machines, you got to take that into account, program it in, start over, and then hope that something new won't happen that you had to program for, but inevitably it will. So you will always need human beings in the loop, no matter how proficient a machine may be. Long rant.
No, I think that's absolutely true. And I think as we put technology, again, as this interface between us, it's going to place a priority on human interaction. And that's changing. I mean, I think back to when my mom used to go to the bank and want to engage with a teller, because for her, a financial transaction was very personal. And the idea of giving that power over to a machine felt very, there was some risk in that. Mm-hmm. And now she's, of course, very adept at using her phone and all the things, but there was a transition to that. And I think there's going to be a similar transition here when people have to turn over some responsibility to the interaction. I think a lot about the candidate experience nowadays and think about the opportunity for us to better nurture people in the process. I think, Jim, we've all heard the horror stories of applying for a job and hearing back maybe 18 months later that you weren't successful, if you hear back at all. You and I get it. I mean, organizations are inundated with applications, many of which are not of a qualified nature, and it makes it challenging to undertake the activity of responding. It's why we invented ATS platforms and to hopefully automate some of those responses, but still things fall through the cracks. But additionally, on the other side of the coin, we do have key talent that we want to make sure stays engaged, that is likely considering other opportunities in the marketplace, that is also, to your point, weighing a potential relocation or a shift in career or shift in trajectory. And the more that we can interact with that individual, either passively or actively, the more likely we're going to be able to work towards a solution that everybody wants. And I think about the old days of, you know, just emailing people company information on a regular cadence. But I think now about it being more of a chatbot orientation, a concierge type service, where if I'm a candidate, I can ask questions about the company's financial performance and what their record is on health and safety and environmental standards. And I can ask about what my potential org chart could be if I was to take this role, and I could find out where I'd sit in the office and all those types of things that traditionally end up on somebody's desk, but may not be sourced with a level of urgency that is commensurate with a candidate, because again, we're working with multiple files and multiple cases, and we're trying to do our best. But the ability to extend and provide a greater level of service opens up opportunities to create a more human experience, even if the technology is the primary interface for it. So that, for me, it gets really, really exciting. And I think it, to your point, allows us to reinvest that time where it actually matters, which is how do we build those lasting relationships? Because sourcing a talent is one part of the role. But you and I both know that we have to then onboard and orient that talent to the organization. And that's a step that often gets left behind pretty quickly in an organization. It's about bums in seats. And we lose good talent because they feel disconnected or perhaps disappointed in what they were told and what they're actually realizing. And maybe they don't feel as tightly woven with the organization as they would if they were in the office 5 days a week. So all those things place a greater premium on onboarding and orientation, which to me, again, is an opportunity for us to shift our emphasis in that talent cycle to where we can really, really add value from a human-to-human perspective.
Yes, definitely, definitely. One thing I'm hoping that this whole AI will bring about is a new era of personalization. Mm. I've applied for different jobs over my career. And one thing that really bugs me is when I get a job sent to me, an alert for a job that has nothing to do with my skill set whatsoever, right? It's like being a Java developer and getting an alert for a barista from Starbucks or something. It's like, yes, that's a different kind of Java than the one I'm dealing with. To your point also too, I also would like hope to see in 2024 and beyond a higher level of personalization. Generally, when I think about applicant tracking systems from a job seeker perspective. I'm looking for a job. I give you my resume. Either I'm a fit or I'm not. And 5 minutes later, if I don't hear from you, I've forgotten not even giving you my resume unless I'm really into the company. The company isn't thinking about me. Poof, you know, maybe one day, possibly you may reach out to me. What I hope to see in the future is personalization, maybe along the lines of what Netflix can do with his recommendation or Amazon can do with his recommendation. But for that, the ATS AI, whatever we want to call it, I'll just say the machine to sort of encapsulate all the technology. The machine should be able to prognosticate a little bit more about where I am, right? So let's say I give my resume and I am a junior software developer working for Radio Shack, to really date myself.
Blockbuster?
Oh, Blockbuster. Yeah, same time period. All right. And so news gets out that Radio Shack is going the way of the dinosaur. So the AI looks inside of the ATS and says, oh, I see, Jim, you work at Radio Shack, at least when you apply for a job here. I heard from the news that Radio Shack is going away. Would you like to talk about some opportunities here at Company X? Because I sense through my AI spider sense that this is a good time to talk to you, right? Or maybe a situation where, hey, Jim, you applied for a job here 2 years ago or 6 years ago when you were a junior software developer. Assuming that you remain in the IT space, by now you are a senior software developer. If so, can we talk about some senior software engineer roles that we have now that you were not a fit for when you initially applied, but hey, it's 6 years later, so what do you know, right? Or maybe AI can send out a message out to people and say, hey, it's been, you know, 3 years since we last touched base. What are you doing with your life? Where do you want to go? Who do you want to be? What are you doing? How can I help you with your career? Because I would love for you to work here at Company X. Tell me what you want so I can be on the lookout for it. How much money do you need? Where do you want to live? That kind of thing. Our CEO gave a talk at the World Economic Forum about, climate change. And he brought up how our company is doing these things to make the world a better place. And based on our last conversation, you mentioned in a chatbot message that you had an interest in saving the planet, something like that. So I want to send you that quote from our CEO because I know that it's on your radar. So mentioning it to you is just so you can keep us in mind as you plan your career. So I would like to see, or I'm going to predict, because hopefully someone has heard me say all that and they're going to start working on it, that interacting with ATS is not a one-time relationship. It's the beginning of an ongoing relationship. I, as a job seeker, I tell you what my interests are. I tell you what my salary is. I go beyond the job of the moment. I tell you what I would like to do. Maybe I'll even tell you what my perfect dream job is. I say, you know what? When I grow up, I want to be a Victoria's Secret photographer, although my wife wouldn't let me. But that's what I want to do. And AI said, hey, you know what? We just bought Victoria's Secret and we're looking for photographers. You mentioned jokingly 8 years ago that you wouldn't mind being a photographer. You want to talk about it? Stuff like that. That's the kind of value I would hope to see from AI interacting with being integrated with an ATS. Instead of just, you know, I'm coming for a job. Did I get the job? I didn't. Okay. I'm not going to think about you ever again, ever, until I'm laid off another time. And it should not be that way. And with AI, we should be able to, at this point, have something like that.
You, Jim, are the author of 5 HR-related books. You've produced your own YouTube series, The Jim Stroud Show, and also produced the Jim Stroud Podcast. What inspires you after all this time?
Looking at things that are totally unrelated to recruiting or HR-related topics and then somehow relate them in some way, right? I'll give you an example of that. So one topic that has been sort of somewhat fascinating a little bit is transhumanism, right? Which makes me think about, dating myself again, the $6 Million Man TV show, right? For those who don't know the $6 Million Man, he was Steve Austin. He was an astronaut. He crashed to Earth. He lost his legs and his arm, and the U.S. government invested $6 million into him. They gave him bionic parts. So when he finished with him, he could run at 60 miles an hour. He could lift up a ton of weight, literally a ton of weight with his right arm. And he could also see 3 miles ahead through his bionic eye. Great TV, at least when you were a kid, when I was a kid, right? And so there are people now who say, you know what? I want to use technology to augment my physicality. I want bionic arms, or I want, you know, a bionic eye, even though I have a perfectly healthy eye. I want to merge with technology so that I can become a superhuman, right? So there are people who are working on that. So when I see that, I think, okay, that is the next level of potential discrimination, right? This is a modern version of that, of what I mean. So Elon Musk has a company called Neuralink, which is putting like little brain implants in your head, right? And the way he's using it is that you put these brain implants in your mind, you become one with the matrix. And if you're a paraplegic person, then you're able to move your legs again because the wiring inside your body gets augmented by the technology and you're able to move a leg or move an arm. Or as he's experimenting with now, you're able to manage a computer system, right? Or you're able to talk on the phone by sending messages from your brain through the matrix to the tool that you're doing, right? So that's becoming a possibility. Probably if technology goes the way it's going now, it'll be reality in a few years or less. So let's say that in the future, Fox News, CNN, or some other big outlet is hiring a social media manager to manage their news properties on Twitter or whatever they call it, X, or whatever they're going to call it by then, right? So you have two people applying. One person is, let's say they are a Gen Zer. They grew up on TikTok and all these things. So that would be like a logical hire for somebody that you grew up with this stuff. So you're probably going to be really good. The other person is someone who has the Neuralink implant in their brain, and they can connect with their phone with their mind. And so news is a very fast-paced system. Do you hire a person who is good with social media from what you can see? Or do you hire somebody who's also good, but they can send a message to their Twitter or to your Twitter or to your Facebook using their mind? So they're at a political debate and somebody says something off the wall. Somebody is typing right away furiously to get the comment out. The other person is just, you know, thinking with their mind, this person just said this, that, and the other. And boom, it's on there automatically. So is the person who with the Neuralink more qualified than the person who doesn't have all the technology in their brain? Some companies may say, you know what, the person with the technology in the brain, that's the person I want because they can do all this stuff. And so companies say, you know what, I want somebody with Neuralink in their brain to be in the social media, be the social media manager. And the people without it are saying, well, you're discriminating against me because I'm not getting all that stuff in my head. I don't care what it does. And you're discriminating against me because I don't have all the technology in my head. And I think things like that are potentially could happen because, another long rant, it's sort of happened before. A real life example is Oscar Pistorius. Don't know if you heard of him, but if you mm-hmm. are into track and field, you probably heard of this guy. He has blades instead of legs. And because I forgot how he lost his leg, but he has like these artificial limbs on his legs. And so he has broken speed records against people who don't have blades, you know, who just, you know, just regular people, right? Who don't have the augmented legs. And so some of the people that he have raced against has said, sure, he's breaking all these speed levels because look, he has these blades on his instead of legs. So the technology he's using is making him a faster runner than me. And so people were saying his record should not be the official race time because the technology he's using with his augmented legs is giving him an unfair advantage. So that's a real life example that I can think of about that. But yeah, that's another long rant. But yeah, I think about things that are totally off the beaten path. And I say, can this be related to HR or recruiting in some way? And that's what gets me going.
Well, I think it's very much with the trend in the sense that one thing we've talked about, artificial intelligence, I think ad nauseum in this conversation, but it's one of those things that binds and connects things that previously weren't connected. And that's a role that you've played throughout the course of your career, telling stories and creating content and starting and continuing conversations, because a lot of things that seemingly are in different silos actually should be connected. And actually we're better for it when things are better connected. To bring things down to, and distill things to the most basic analogy back to our talent lifecycle. When the hiring manager, the talent sourcing individual, the recruiter, and the person holding the purse strings in the organization and the HR professional all are in sync, we're going to have a good candidate experience and a good onboarding hiring experience. Mm-hmm. Those things don't always happen. And now we have tools around us that are going to be able to fill in some of those gaps that previously existed, to your point, when we bake in that intentionality. I also think that because of the rate of innovation and change, we can all benefit from looking outside of our purview. And I'm guilty of it like everybody else. I mean, I know a lot about HR technology and AI and virtual reality, but do I know a lot about literature? Do I know a lot about, you know, art from the 16th century? I'm trying to find more sources of information myself. And I think another useful exercise as we evolve is we can learn things from other disciplines. We can learn things from marketing when we're in recruitment and sales when we're in recruitment. We can learn things from technology. And I think about your experiences with Google and, you know, other large organizations in the tech industry. How much has the candidate experience evolved because of the tech particular industry and what they brought to the talent conversation at a time when they were very much in a war for talent, fighting over developers, fighting over those key people to be able to scale those unicorn companies. Mm-hmm. You know, they, a lot of ways we've learned a lot from those industries and brought them into other places like retail and transportation, but only after certain industries innovated. So I think, you know, part of that is asking questions that you wouldn't normally ask and looking for sources of information that you wouldn't normally find. You know, I'm curious, Jim, as you do that, where are some of the places that you go to for information?
A lot of places. I go to newsletters. There are hundreds, thousands, millions of newsletters out there. And I will go through Substack, do a search on AI, for example, and I will subscribe to those newsletters so that I don't bomb my email. I use this app called Stoop Inbox, STOOP inbox.com. And I subscribe to newsletters through that app. And so in my app, I have hundreds of newsletters that I subscribe to. I will just sort of scroll through and see which story catches my eye and then sort of go from there. I also read a lot of Reddit posts. That's my guilty pleasure. And I also am very fortunate, again, in my role as a SourceCon editor, to get a lot of information from the sourcing community, and they share a lot of information on SourceCon.com and in our Facebook groups and other groups that we have there. So I get a lot of information that way.
And what's next for you, Jim? It's 2024 right around the corner. What's next for you?
On my mind is just SourceCon. I'm taking it to the next level. We have a lot of interesting things planned. We have two conferences a year, and this next one's coming up is in April in Orlando, Florida. So excited about that. But we have other conferences that we are planning in addition to that. Very excited. I sort of want to spill the beans, but I am not allowed to at this time. But if anyone is curious, please, by all means, go to sourcecon.com, sign up for our newsletter, and stay informed that way.
We certainly will. And I guess the best way to get a hold of you is probably on LinkedIn.
Yeah, catch me on LinkedIn, or you can email me. I'd like to think I'm approachable. Jim@sourcecon.com.
Cool. We'll put all those details in the show notes of this podcast. Jim, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for the time today, and wishing you luck with SourceCon and everything else in the future.
Thank you, sir. Much appreciated.
Bento HR is a digital transformation consultancy working at the intersection of strategy, technology, and people operations. We partner with organizations, private equity, and venture capital firms to accelerate value creation and identify the organization's highest leverage initiatives. And this can take place in many forms, from strategic planning and alignment to technology, procurement, implementation, and integration, along with organizational design, process reengineering, and change management. With our proven track record of working with complex, high-growth organizations, we provide a lens that goes beyond the balance sheet, increasing enterprise readiness, resilience, and value. For more information, check us out at bentohr.com.